And now, some important words from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation, an engagement of services to be offered, and only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul.
Welcome to the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. This is Real Money with David Holland.
Yes, it is. It's real money we're going to talk about today. A lot going on in the market. Lots of interesting stuff happening. And so let me tell you what we're going to talk about on the show today. We're going to talk about five ways you could be sabotaging your retirement. We're also going to talk about a warning for you, especially for a warning for couples and spouses. There is a surprising report out that is actually, it's kind of a dangerous, alarming concern that I will share with you about couples and their money. And before we do that, we are going to go to the riveting, exciting, just can't rip your ears away from the speaker, is the fastest 5 minutes
in
finance.
5 minutes in finance.
That's pretty good stuff.
I like that.
Hey, Scott, we're working on a new jingle. We'll have it for the program next week.
All right. I mean, I like that one.
Okay.
I never had a jingle. I'm 43 years old. It's my first jingle.
Everybody's, you know, hey, it's what do they say? It's always a matter of time, or it's always, I don't know. Anyway, let's just get to it. I know you're dying to talk about the jobs report. So,
yeah,
but before that, give us the numbers.
Well, Friday's market was another pretty boring one. We had a really good day Tuesday when the market opened on the holiday shortened week. Other than that, it's been pretty boring. Friday's market, the Dow was down 56 points, S&P down only 3 points. The NASDAQ eked out a little teeny gain of 4 points. But coming off of a really decent, we'll dig into it in a little bit. It's not quite as decent as it seems, but a decent unemployment number Friday morning really didn't give a whole lot of optimism in the market. I think everybody expected that the numbers that we got, which were 200,000 new jobs created in December, unemployment dropping to 8.5%, I think that seemed like something that people wanted to get excited about, but the more we dug into the numbers, the more it was kind of like, eh.
Yeah, and I think this shows is a good demonstration that, obviously that was going to be the question is, Scott, why are we getting a 55-point drop on the Dow for Friday when we had what was supposed to be, or if you read the headline, a good jobs report and a drop in the unemployment rate?
Yeah, the big thing that people are looking at in the jobs report that came out on Friday are what kind of jobs are created and who is actually looking for jobs. So if we really break it down, the types of jobs that were created are a little bit seasonal in nature, a little bit temporary. So 44% of the new positions that were announced in Friday's report were either courier service positions or jobs at bars and restaurants, which historically they have to ramp up for the holidays. So maybe a little bit of an inflated number there.
And so December might be skewing it. It might be a little bit of a false number, or
yeah,
not really the real deal.
Yeah, and they do seasonally adjust it, but the January employment number will be very interesting to see what happens with the courier companies, the bars and restaurants, and the retailers also had growth in employment. So we have to expect some of those to drop off.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about the participation rate, because I think that's very illuminating for people. We were talking before that we started the show, and you were kind of breaking it down. I think that'd be real helpful. And we can do that in the next segment, but is there anything else you want to talk about on the other subjects before we get to that?
Yeah, a couple things. We've been talking about the euro all week. The euro fell below $1.27 on Friday. That's a 16-month low. Just continues to fall. And Hungary's credit rating was lowered all the way to junk by finally Fitch, which is the third ratings agency. All three of the ratings agencies have Hungary at junk now.
Or if you want to say it more politically correct, it's now a high yield bond, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, now I saw the Hungary report out, and I was going to ask you about it, so I'm glad you mentioned it. The big sticking point right now for them is that they have an agreement on whether or not they're actually going to be able to implement all the austerity measures or whatever it is. I know what it is. It's they are trying to get a line of credit from the IMF, from the International Monetary Fund. They don't think they're going to need it, but just in case. And there's something that they did in their legislation.
They have done all kinds of crazy things.
Something with their legislation that may keep them from getting it, and that's why their currency fell against the euro, and they are having this. They had this write down on their rating.
Yeah, they and it's their own fault because they've done crazy things like they've nationalized pensions. You know, and the Eurozone sees that, and they're like, you can't nationalize pensions. What are you doing? But worse than that, they took their central bank, you know, similar to our central bank, the Fed, and they basically removed its independence. So it's now a very political machine rather than an independent machine that's focused on monetary policy. Now they're part of the political
machine. You couldn't have two better warning signs for us in either trying to do away with the Fed or nationalizing the pensions. Oh my gosh, can you imagine what that literally means? Is that if they really did that, and I'll have to do a little more homework on that, because if they really did that, that means they took away any private company's pension or the defined benefit plans. They just took the money.
Yeah.
And then they said, okay, we're going to make the payment.
Yeah, trust you.
Oh my
gosh.
Trust
us. We'll
trust us.
We'll
pay you. Yeah. Can you imagine?
So they basically took a corporate sponsored retirement plan like our 401k and they turned it into Social Security.
But they took the money.
Right.
That's the bottom line.
And we see how well that's been managed. So,
ouch.
So those are the reasons. And Fitch finally downgraded them on Friday, which was not really news because the other major ratings agencies have been downgrading them really since late summer, early part of fall.
Wow.
Corporate news, Goldman Sachs was downgraded by Wells Fargo and Alcoa fell after they said that they were really going to cut their aluminum production by almost 12% because they're under a lot of pressure because steel prices are so low.
So they're going to cut their volume or just scale back production.
Yeah, they're going to reduce their smelting capacity by 12%, which means plant closures.
Okay. So cutting your smelting is no laughing matter.
No.
That's pretty serious.
No, and it doesn't refer to the fish. And then next week, final thing, earnings season starts, earnings from Alcoa. Tuesday, the big news will be the New Hampshire primary. Wednesday, we get a 10-year auction. Thursday, jobless claims and retail sales reports. And then Friday, import and export prices as well as consumer sentiment. So we get to start the whole cycle over in a couple days.
And let's talk for a minute about the report out on U.S. manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
A positive sign. This appears to be a real positive sign, not just maybe the numbers being a little off like the jobs report.
Yeah, actually, the manufacturing sector has added jobs 2 years in a row. That's the first time it's done that in a very, 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 very long time. The real gauge for manufacturing is the ISM number, and they use what's called a diffusion index, where they basically go out to all these manufacturing companies and they say, are you going to hire people? How's business look? Is inventory moving? Stuff like that. And they basically make a numeric index out of that. Anything above 50 shows expansion. Anything below 50 shows contraction, and the number for December was 55.1. That's a pretty good number.
Wow. Well, you know, there are a lot of things we can talk about with that, but we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to dig a little deeper, if you don't mind, into the jobs report and help people understand this whole concept of the participation rate. Stay tuned.
Wouldn't you love to have a guide on the world of personal finance that cuts through all the bull and answers your questions honestly and directly? Certified financial planner David Holland is pulling back the curtain on how to plan for your financial future with his first book, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. Filled with David's practical insights from 20 years of industry experience, secrets, answers, complicated financial questions in terms that are easy for anyone to understand. Order your copy today at davidholland.com or by calling 888-747-PLAN. Ask how to get your copy at no charge. Many people invest without ever knowing what they pay in investment fees. When was the last time you dropped your car off for service and told them to fix whatever they want without getting an estimate first? I'll bet never. Why treat your portfolio any different? Certified financial planner David Holland and his team are ready to help. Schedule your free 19-point investment inspection and we can tell you exactly what you're paying in investment fees. Schedule your free consultation today by calling 888-747-PLAN. That's 888-747-7526. Or visit us on the web at www.davidholland.com.
All right. Well, this has gotten hard talking on the break. We're like, well, we want to make sure we get to this because there's a lot of good stuff going on or interesting stuff. Some of it's not so good. And one of the things that's not so good is let's dig into this whole idea of a jobs report being a jobs report being a jobs report. Is it real data or is it the numbers? Are they looking better just because people are not looking for jobs anymore?
Yeah. What you're referring to, and then I'll give you some kind of eye-opening statistics about how slow a rate of growth 200 jobs a month is.
Well, but don't make me open my eyes too much. I want to be able to sleep tonight.
All right, I'll I'll get you on the participation rate first. The participation rate strictly refers to the number of people who are eligible to work. Folks who are working or folks who are looking for a job actively are part of the participation rate. People who have just said, forget it, I'm not going to find a job, I'm not even going to look for a job, they are not part of the participation rate. So the lower the participation rate goes, the fewer people are looking for a job, it artificially deflates the unemployment.
So the, let me get this right, the denominator is getting smaller?
Bigger. No, the numerator is getting smaller.
The
numerator is getting smaller. Let me put it in context for you this way. Back in 2001, of everybody who was eligible to be looking for a job, about 65% of them were in the participation rate, meaning they were working or looking for a job. Participation rate right now is about 58.5%. So that's a lot fewer people who are looking for jobs.
Okay, I'm with you.
Now, to put it in even more context, if we take the participation rate right now, and if we use the size of the if the size of the workforce were the same as when Obama took office, the unemployment rate would be about 10.9%. What that says is that there are just so many people who don't have jobs that just aren't looking. Now, all of a sudden, if they started to look for a job back to the same pace of looking for a job as when Obama took over in the White House, the unemployment rate would be about 10.9%.
Wow. So we would have an 11% unemployment rate if everybody who just stopped looking for work over the last several years.
If people hadn't quit looking for a job.
So while we've created, the economy has created 200,000 jobs, that's a start. But we still have a long way to go.
Yeah, and I think you'll see volatility in the unemployment number because as this unemployment number comes down, it will cause people who are not looking for a job to start to look for a job, which brings them back into the participation rate, and the unemployment rate artificially goes up. Now, to give you a little bit more context about how $200,000 jobs a month is not going to cut it, if we go back to the maximum number of jobs that were created in 1 month, in the 2000s. So let's take the very best jobs creation month we had in all of the 2000s. That was 472,000 jobs in a month. If we had that type of jobs growth on a steady pace, it would take us until about 2014 to get back to where we were unemployed.
So if we had the best month every time.
Every month.
Wow.
Until 2014. Now, if we take the average job creation, which is 208,000 jobs, similar to what we had just this past month, it's going to take us till 2024 to get back to the unemployment rate that we had in 2008. So 200,000 jobs is terrific. It's too slow.
So the bottom line here is that we've got to ramp up job creation. 200,000 is not making enough of a dent.
Yeah, it's not. Think of it this way: if you have a bucket full of water and you've got a hole in the bottom of the bucket and you're pouring water back into the top, basically that's where we are right now. We're taking the water out of the hole and putting it back up in the top.
It's not enough.
It's just not getting there.
It's not enough. Wow, that's just amazing.
So the unemployment rate, I think that's really why in Friday's market, most traders really dug into the unemployment rate, and eventually they were like, eh.
They went, eh.
Yeah, not so
okay.
Great.
Well, so with where we are today, one of the a report out from Bloomberg had a report out talking about what, quote-unquote, rich people are looking to invest in. And the report talks about they're looking to put more into commodities. And so let's talk a little bit about it. I have a theory, and you tell me what you think about it, Scott. The if we've got cash and people are looking to put more, and obviously somebody with more wealth is in a position to invest more cash than somebody with less, that's kind of obvious. So if those people are looking and saying, okay, I've got cash that's been sitting on the sidelines, and I'm looking at what I can do with it, and if my options are pretty slim to make money by going into CDs, we just talked about earlier in the week, we talked about, you know, CD rates being for 5 years, 1%, and of course, 10-year treasuries are barely at 2 or a little bit under, then the quote-unquote smart money is going to say, well, what else can I do? And so the report out is that they're going to be looking at going into commodities.
Yeah, the report you're referring to is from the Institute for Private Investors, and they survey families who have about $30 million in investable assets. And they go out and they basically say, what are you going to do with the money? And most of them are saying, well, we're not going to leave it in cash. We're going to invest in commodities.
We're going to put it to work.
And we're going to put it in real estate. Now, just to give you an idea of what type of people we're talking about, these are not greedy people. Their expectation for their portfolio is 4.9%. So they're not looking to you know, knock the ball out of the park or take on a huge amount of risk. What they're doing is they're sitting back and they're saying, I've got all this money in cash. If inflation is 3% and I'm earning 1%, then I'm basically guaranteed a loss. You don't, well, and you, know, I think, you don't get to have $30 million in investable assets by saying, how do I guarantee myself a loss?
Exactly. You don't get there by doing that. And the other thing that this report tells us is that there's some expectation that we're going to have inflation, that it's not dead, it's going to come back. And that when it does, that's obviously why commodities are something that they're looking at as a hedge. And so when we build our portfolios, as you know, Scott, we include a commodities exposure for precisely this reason, is to help in addressing inflation, where there might be an opportunity for commodities growth, and that will obviously be a return to the portfolio, but it's also a hedge.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's important that, you know, we talk about diversification all the time, and it's another asset class.
But we're not saying for anybody to go out there, sell everything they've got, and put all your money into gold or copper or anything that's considered a commodity.
Yeah, just another piece of the asset allocation pie. The advantage that we have now that we didn't have even 10 years ago is that you can invest in commodities through ETFs and mutual funds, and you don't have to go on margin and buy the futures or take delivery of, you know, hundreds of bushels of wheat.
Nobody wants a pork belly truck to back up to their house.
God, no.
Well, when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about five ways that people could be sabotaging their retirement. Stay tuned, and you will find this very interesting.
Wouldn't it be nice to learn more about a financial topic from the comfort of your own home? You bring the popcorn, and certified financial planner David Holland will bring the answers to your financial questions. David's DVD, Seven Deadly Sins of Retirement Planning, reveals common mistakes you may be making when planning your financial future. Learn how taking the right steps now may help you enjoy inflation-adjusted retirement income later. This free DVD will quickly show you that financial planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. Call 888-747-PLAN to request your free copy of Seven Deadly Sins of Retirement Planning today, or go to davidholland.com. 70% of Americans age 65 and older will need long-term care during their lifetimes. The average cost of a nursing home is $80,000 per year. And with the average length of stay for women being almost 4 years, that could end up costing you ladies $300,000. Could you afford that? Certified financial planner David Holland and his team are ready to help you explore options that might be a lot better than writing a check or going on Medicaid. Schedule your free consultation today by calling 888-747-PLAN. That's 888-747-7526. Or visit us on the web at www.davidholland.com.
All right, we are back, and I promise to talk about the five ways you could be sabotaging your retirement. U.S. News report had a good article out, and I think that there are, and these are things that I'm working with people every day that I see, and so let me share some of this with you, because if you're on your road to retirement or you're already there, especially if you're getting down to those crunch years from 50 to 60, if that's where you are, listen carefully, because this is very relevant to you. Number one, if you are looking for an opportunity, maybe with everything going on in the economy, and we talked before the break with Scott about some of the things happening, that if you are in the process of looking for a job, maybe you're in the hiring process, one of the things that's probably most important about that hiring process, and many people just say, hey, I'm happy to get a job, but if you are in that process and you have an opportunity to, you know, you've been offered, made an offer, try to negotiate as best you can. Again, I realize the environment, but try to negotiate the best you can for a starting salary, and say, and here's one of the questions you can ask, is there any room there for any room for improvement? Because here's why it's so important. The starting salary you have with a company is going to be the basis for a lot of, obviously, your future raises. So let's say you started a certain salary, and then they come back next year. Your employer says, okay, we're going to give you a 5% raise. Well, if you started with $5,000 or $10,000 more, obviously, that's a compounding number. So it's a lot like investing, that, you know, you get that money in earlier, then that money sits there the whole time you're trying to invest for your future. Another one that's very interesting and important for people who are working toward retirement is in order to get the most out of Social Security, you want to make sure, or as get close to this as you can, is to try to get 35 years in of Social Security working income, of taxable income that's subject to Social Security. You want to make sure you've got 35 years in, because what Social Security does when they calculate your Social Security benefit is they will average, now they do some adjusting for inflation, but they will average your highest 35 years of income. So if you've got some goose eggs, let's say you retire and you've only got 30 years in, well, they're going to average in five more zeros. So if you can get the whole 35 in, that'll make your Social Security benefit higher. And if you can even work a little longer than that, depending on your situation, you can also knock out maybe some lower numbers, maybe at the beginning of your career, especially if you're at the peak part of your earning period. Another thing that can hurt people trying to plan for their retirement, and this is a very interesting one to me, is letting lifestyle inflation creep in. If you have some good years, it's all about, you know, it's all about what you're used to. So if you have some good earning years, it's very easy for us as humans, or American humans at least, to adapt to that higher income and adjust our lifestyle. But then if things go the other way, that deleveraging is very painful. But also, if you're able to at least maybe not absorb all of your income as you see income increases in your employment, if you're able to have some of that go toward increasing your savings, then that will make a big difference. Because the other thing that we don't want to do is to think that there's always tomorrow. You know, I talk about often that that age 50 to 60 or age 50 to 65 is really the peak earning period. It's also a real critical time for socking money away. But the reality is that if we can start even sooner, that's even better. And so these are some things that are helpful. And one more thing that I want to mention, and that is we want to be careful. This really is more for the person who's already retired. We want to be careful from, it's almost like the lifestyle adjustment for getting a higher income. We want to be careful that when our investments do well, that we don't say, oh, okay, let me take more income out. So let's say that your investments, we have a good market, and we, of course, are all hoping that the market continues to improve, that we have a good market and we have a good return, and we say, hey, you know what? I made a bunch of money this year. I'm going to take more out than I was before. Now, the risk is that obviously you take more out and you adjust your lifestyle to that, but then what happens when the market does poorly? Are you going to as easily cut back that income? Maybe, maybe not. And again, that cutting back is very difficult. And so that's something to be very careful about. And another thing that I think that people, and this comes up a lot, and so if you're thinking about this, you're not alone. Another thing that people talk about and think about a lot is, do I go into retirement with debt? Do I go into retirement with debt? Do I try to pay everything off? Or do I work until I can get all the debt paid off? Or do I just accept the fact that I'm going to have some debt going into retirement? And so, of course, the answer is always it depends, but a couple of thoughts on this for you. Number one, it's not a crime or a sin to go into retirement with debt, but excessive debt, yes, because you're going to be stepping away from those earning years where you can continue to work on it. When you move into retirement, obviously you've got your investments, your lump sum, what you've got to work with, and that's it. And of course, you hopefully get Social Security and a pension, but a lot of people don't get pensions. So if it's possible to continue to work a little bit longer and be able to pay off the debt substantially or pay it off completely, then that's obviously the best case scenario. But for a lot of people, that's not practical. But I don't like the idea when people get so obsessed with it that it drives them bonkers or it causes them to make bad decisions. I saw a person I had met with and talked to, they became so fixated on their debt that they actually took a large chunk of money, and I advised against this, but this is what they decided to do, and they took a large chunk of money out of their IRA out of their 401k before they retired to be able to pay off their debt. Now, it's good to be debt-free, and that's a great feeling that a lot of people have, but you've got to be careful how you do it, because if you take a lot of money out of a 401k or any other IRA, well, you're going to trigger a lot of taxes. So that's not the best way to do it. So just be careful with debt. Be rational about it. And it's important not to be saddled with a lot of debt, but there's nothing wrong with having debt as you enter your retirement. So when we come back from the break, I'm going to talk about that special report I mentioned at the top of the show that is a surprising and dangerous report about couples and their money. Stay tuned.
My name is Dale Pazinski, and this is how I live United. I volunteer with United Way, helping the homeless in my community by teaching computer skills and helping them build a basic resume. It's huge when somebody says, "That job that you helped me apply for, I got it." My name is Dale Pazinski. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United.
Go to liveunitedinvolutiaflagler.org. Brought to you by the United Way and the Ad Council.
Could you wallpaper your living room with the amount of financial seminar invitations you receive each week? Certified financial planner David Holland is ready to give you good, solid financial planning tips without the crowds, rude waiters, or tired sales pitch. Do you wonder what the best retirement income strategy is for your situation? David's DVD, Retirement Income Strategies, provides a discussion on some of the income planning strategies used by retirees and baby boomers. This DVD will help you weigh your choices from the vast number of financial products available today. Call 888-747-PLAN to request your free copy or go to davidholland.com. David Holland's newly released book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, is the first in his innovative series, Confessions of a Financial Planner. This book is written to provide easily accessible information to anyone from any walk of life on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finance. You won't find industry jargon, difficult theories, or condescending commentary in this confession series, which aims to give readers the knowledge and power to build their financial future. Order your copy today at davidholland.com or by calling 888-747-PLAN. Don't forget to ask how to get your copy at no charge. Did you know living longer could be the death of your retirement? According to the U.S. Census Bureau, babies born today can expect to live until an average age of 78. Whether you're retiring today, tomorrow, or in 20 years, you must ask yourself, will your retirement plan go the distance? Certified financial planner David Holland and his team are ready to help. Schedule your free consultation today by calling 888-747-PLAN. That's 888-747-7526. Or visit us on the web at www.davidholland.com.
Okay, here is my disturbing report on couples and their money. Fidelity recently commissioned a study to be done on couples and money and how they view money and how confident they are about their retirement and how it works. And there were some very interesting things, but some of it was alarming. So I want to use this as a warning and express a concern and make sure that people are, that you, my listener, are taking this into consideration as you plan your retirement. Couple things right off the bat that jumped out of this report. Number one, when the couples were asked how confident they would be if they found themselves as the survivor. So if, you know, for the husband, his wife were to pass, or for the wife, her husband were to pass. And what was very interesting was that the husbands, over 70% of them, felt like they would be comfortable handling the retirement finances. But for the wives, only 35%, so just over a third, felt comfortable. That means, let me flip it around, that means that two-thirds of the women in a spousal relationship did not feel confident about being able to handle their finances. Now, that to me is just shocking. And it's a strong call to make sure, especially to make sure that the spouse, both spouses are participating, because one of the other things in the report said that a lot of times the only one member of the couple actually is the one meeting with the advisor. And a lot of times, of course, that's the husband. So I insist that the husband and wife come in when I meet with them for financial planning. If you are married and you are not both participating, please, please, please make sure you're both involved, because I've seen situations where the survivor does not know what to do. They are forced to make decisions quickly. And that is a dangerous game. So we'll talk more about this on a future show. Thank you for being with me. And remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do.
You load 16 tons.
This has been another edition of Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
You load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.